I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and preach in...
Good morning and welcome to EcoTalk, your radio home for environmental news and views. Lots to talk about this week. Again, the energy bill was signed by President Bush on Monday, the same day oil and gas prices hit a new high of $63 a barrel, which has since been exceeded again. Against that backdrop, a bill that even W admits will do little or nothing to lower the price of gas, and legislation critics say will do next to nothing to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We're going to take a look at what's ahead for our energy future. Big question mark. Now, in signing the long-awaited and much-debated energy legislation, Bush said the new bill will launch a strategy for the 21st century. Well, if that's the case, we may be in for a dark and dirty century indeed, because that bill includes a lot of subsidies and incentives to maintain the status quo reliance on fossil fuels while doing relatively little to promote renewable energy development, unless you want to include nuclear power in there. And to shed more light on all of this, we'll be speaking this hour with Mark Hertzgard first. He's an author and correspondent for The Nation. And in our second half hour, we'll be meeting one of the people who co-founded the Apollo Alliance, Bob Borsage. But first, we want to welcome Mark Hertzgard back to the EcoTalk program. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Happy to be here.
So let's just get your first impressions, overall view of this bad energy bill.
It's basically, as you said, status quo. It could not have made the energy lobbyists very unhappy. They got pretty much everything they wanted, except for, of course, the ANWR vote, which was left out. That will come up in September in a budget bill. And the other question, which probably led to the breakthrough, was they dropped the what had been a very contentious item in previous years, which was the desire to have liability for the producers of the MTBE additive. That has always been a problem. That got dropped. But aside from those two things, I'd say that Big Energy got pretty much everything they wanted in this bill. Certainly no major shift away from continued reliance on fossil fuels. And as you mentioned, a huge new commitment to an energy source many people thought was dead, nuclear power.
Now, it may be a renewable source, but it's not exactly safe and not cheap, like they sometimes make it out to be. You wrote a very interesting column for the San Francisco Chronicle this past Sunday in which you make a case, a very strong one, for why nuclear energy cannot solve global warming and, a lot of our energy problems. Why is that?
It's very interesting that some of the people like Dick Cheney, who have always poo-pooed the idea of global warming, are now quite cynically, I think, invoking the danger of global warming in favor of nuclear power. And there's an obvious reason for that, which is that nuclear power, whatever its other problems, does not produce significant greenhouse gases. Nuclear fission doesn't produce carbon into the air. It produces radioactive emissions, of course. This has been the reason why not just the Bush administration, but many Democrats also voted for this in Congress. And even some leading environmental thinkers have now come around to the idea that, we don't necessarily like nuclear, but we've got to accept it as the price to pay to deal with global warming. And as I argued in the piece in the San Francisco Chronicle, that's really wrong-headed. It betrays a complete misunderstanding of energy economics, because nuclear is so expensive that it would actually, if you invest in nuclear power, it actually makes global warming worse, because nuclear is seven times less cost-effective at getting rid of carbon, at displacing, as they say, displacing the need to burn oil and coal. Seven times less cost-effective than energy efficiency, which is by far the smartest, quickest, and cheapest way to increase our energy supplies.
And you say one of the reasons it actually is a lot more expensive than they would want us to believe is because they don't factor in the cost of building these nuclear plants? Is that possible?
Yeah, this is one of the great tricks that the nuclear industry spokespeople like to use. I actually heard this on NPR's Science Friday show a couple of months ago, where they had a flack on from the industry who said nuclear power is the cheapest source of electricity around. But she had the misfortune to be up against a nuclear critic, Arjun Makajani, who really knows his stuff, and he pointed out that, well, aren't you only talking about the cost of operating the plants? And that's exactly right. They, in the industry, they like to say nuclear is cheap, and it is true that operating the plant, once you get it built, is relatively cheap. But to say that that makes nuclear power cheap is a little bit like saying that it's cheap to drive a Rolls Royce, but you only look at what the gasoline costs you and not what the sticker price on the car was. That's what they're trying to do with nuclear and claiming that it's cheap.
And who do they think they're fueling?
Well, I think if Arjun hadn't been on that show, they would have gotten away with it. And, you know, most people don't know very much about these issues, and that's, I think, part of the reason why some very important and influential environmental thinkers have come out in favor of nuclear power. I reported in the Chronicle story, Jared Diamond, the author of Guns, Germs, and Steel.
And more recently, Collapse.
I'm sorry?
And more recently, Collapse.
And Collapse. You know, and he gave a lecture here in San Francisco last month and was very critical of George W. Bush throughout his talk. But he, too, endorsed nuclear as a response to global warming.
And dropped some jaws and some gasps in the audience.
Yeah, the audience was your typical Bay Area grouping of very affluent, very white, environmentally minded people, and they could not quite believe what they'd heard, that Jared Diamond was coming out for nuclear power. But he's not alone. Stuart Brand, the former editor of the Whole Earth Catalog, and a number of British environmental thinkers have also come out in favor of nuclear. And as I argue in the piece, I think it's a really a major strategic error for these environmentalists to do this, because in fact going nuclear would make global warming worse.
And I love the quote when all the idealists in the audience in Berkeley, you know, gasped and said, oh no, groaned if it was audible. I wasn't there, but I read about it in your column. Stuart Brand said, deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it.
Should we deal with it?
I don't think so. I think, as I say, it would really be a step backwards. We absolutely, well, let me say this. They're absolutely right that we have got to do everything possible to combat global warming. And that means using a lot less fossil fuels. But it is simply misinformed to think that nuclear is the way to do that. And there's two reasons. One we touched on, which is how much it costs. And because a nuclear power plant costs at least $2 billion.
That was billion with a B.
Yeah, B, if you took that $2 billion and instead of building that nuke, you did things like insulate drafty buildings and buy hybrid cars and install super efficient light bulbs and clothes dryers and refrigerators, you would get rid of seven times more demand for fossil fuels. And that's partly because nuclear power, by definition, only produces electricity. But most of our greenhouse gas emissions don't come from electricity. Electricity is only about one-third of our total energy use. So nuclear power does nothing about transportation and heating of buildings, which are two of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions.
Very good point. And another one, of course, is a safety issue. We have not figured out how to safely dispose of this waste, and we're not going to, I don't think, anytime soon. And just this show always seems to be taped on a day when there's breaking news, and today's is just, you know, juxtapose what we're talking about with this story out of Washington. Conceding there's no way to know what life will be like in a million years, the Environmental Protection Agency nevertheless proposed limits on how much radiation a person should be exposed to from a nuclear waste dump in that distant time. The proposal would limit exposure near the proposed Yucca Mountain facility in Nevada to 15 millirems a year for 10,000 years into the future, but then increase the allowable level to 350 millirems for up to 1 million years. That higher level is more than three times what is allowed from nuclear facilities today by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Just to put this in perspective, a standard chest X-ray is about 10 millirems. So,
yeah, well, nuclear has problems, but I must say that I am not one of the environmentalists who think that nuclear is completely ruled out. And I say that precisely because I know the alternative is mainly coal. And coal is killing thousands of people a day, thousands of people a year around the world right now. And yes, nuclear has problems. I've investigated the nuclear industry. I'm not at all poo-pooing them, but I think that the people who are arguing against nuclear, environmentalists, have to be honest and look at coal. This is the other trade-off.
Okay.
Coal is a serious killer.
Okay, we're going to get back after the break and talk about coal, oil, and other fossil fuels. We're speaking with Mark Herzgard. This is EcoTalk on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
But when this offer's gone, it's gone. 1-800-322-1238. 1-800-322-1238.
How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we.
Welcome back to EcoTalk, and we are talking about the energy legislation that was signed earlier this week by President Bush. And on that day, he said nuclear is where we need to go. We need to invest more in nuclear power. And we're speaking with someone who just wrote a column very convincingly about why nuclear energy cannot save us from climate change and some of the other ills we are suffering through right now. And in fact, under this energy plan, there will still be 100,000 American troops in Iraq, because this does nothing really to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. The planet will still be warming, and we'll still be paying, at least here in the Bay Area now, close to $3 a gallon for gas. So we've been speaking about some of the pitfalls of nuclear energy. The cost is one of them. Mark was saying that they don't factor in the cost of building the plants, which is pretty amazing. And also there's a safety issue. And right before the break, Mark and I were discussing, you know, why we can't just completely, you know, say down with nuclear, because we have to look at alternatives. But I guess it's the human error. We all, you know, live through Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. That factor is what's also scary, in addition to just what do we do with the waste.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, I don't want to be misunderstood here. Nuclear raises really unparalleled kinds of dangers on the safety front. If you do get it wrong, the consequences are enormous. I simply insist that it's not as if what we're doing right now, which is overwhelming reliance on coal, which is the major source of electricity production in the world, that is the main driver of climate change, and it is killing thousands of people through air pollution and mining accidents every year. So what we really need to be talking about is a way to get rid of coal, and the people who support nukes make that argument that, look, coal kills and nuclear won't.
We hope.
I happen to think that nuclear is also very dangerous. And the other thing we haven't brought up is the weapons proliferation angle here. We might now have Iran pursuing nuclear, what it says is civilian nuclear power. But, of course, once you've got that enriched uranium, you can use it to make weapons.
And we also haven't talked about peak oil, which is one of your topics. So in the remaining 4 minutes we have, tell us why we may be about to peak, if we haven't already, in terms of supply and the low-hanging fruit for oil.
Yeah, peak oil is a phrase you're going to hear a lot more about in the coming months and years. And it refers to the fact, or to the theory, I should say, that the world has reached the midway point on oil. We've pumped out about half of all the oil that's underneath the earth. There's about half left. But that actually makes it sound a lot more comforting than it really is, because historically speaking, that second half of the oil, most of that never comes out of the ground because of it's geologically difficult to get to. It's economically terribly expensive to do. And so the people who are talking about this, which include insiders of the oil industry, such as Matt Simmons, an energy investment banker who's briefed Bush and Cheney on this, they say that once you hit peak oil, what happens is a steep decline in supply and thus a rapid and volatile increase in prices. Once that happens, you're going to see that the oil price today, you mentioned, is over $60 a barrel this week. That is going to sound cheap, and $3 a gallon gas is going to sound like a bargain. And what this really, again, emphasizes is that we have got to get off quickly of our reliance on fossil fuels. And the quickest way to do that in the short term is with energy efficiency, whether it be with cars or energy-efficient light bulbs. And then over the long term, we need a serious crash program to develop genuinely renewable, clean energy sources, in particular solar and wind.
And how far does this energy bill take us towards that goal or not?
Very little. About 90% of the funding and energy there goes towards traditional sources. There's a couple of nods towards renewables, a couple of tax incentives for things like buying hybrid cars, but overwhelmingly biased towards the status quo, unfortunately.
Your column was quite good. Is it available online anywhere, Mark?
Yes, it's at my website, www.markhertzgaard.com, and also I think it went out on Tom Paine this week.
Okay, and what else should we be looking for? What other big issues are on the forefront in terms of environment and energy?
Well, we have a lot of them. We didn't talk about this energy bill. They've gotten rid of the Public Utilities Holding Company Act, which sounds very wonky, but what it was something that prevented Enrons, and they've now gotten rid of that in the name of deregulation. And what that means is that you're going to see more and more monopoly purchases of your electricity, and maybe Exxon is going to own your electric power plant. That sure sounds fun, doesn't it?
Hey, I mean, it's hard to imagine a combination of circumstances, you know, externalities, you know, that could be any more compelling for really shifting, you know, getting our heads out of the sand, our leadership anyway. And it's just beyond frustrating to not see this happening.
Well, one quick comment there. It's not happening in Washington, but there is a lot of good stuff happening at the state and local level, not just here in California, but in various states across the country. You know, all the mayors of this country have come together and said, we're going to meet the Kyoto Accords on global warming. We're going to do that by investing in energy efficiency and green renewable energy sources. So I think that at the local and state level, both citizens and businesses and government officials are realizing that we cannot wait for George W. Bush and Congress in Washington to do what we need to do to save our economy and our environment.
And we are going to be talking more about that in our second half hour. We'll be interviewing Bob Borisaj. He is one of the founders of the Apollo Alliance, and he's going to be talking about what a lot of cities and states are doing to promote renewable energy development. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And Mark has a great book, several actually, but one of the ones I've read that I'm crazy about is Earth Odyssey, Around the World in Search of Our Environmental Future. You're listening to EcoTalk on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that